Maria felt Rattan's hands on her hips, felt his cock hard against her ass, felt him probing her sex with his fingers, pushing, pushing in, then pressing further. It hurt. Maria struggled for a moment, but he didn't let her go, and then Sarah's hands cupped her face, and she pulled Maria down to her, her eyes understanding. Sarah pulled Maria to her, kissing her lips, her cheeks, her eyelids, whispering in her ear as the man thrust and thrust. Sarah's murmured comfort matched his rhythm. He'll pay. He'll pay. He'll pay. Chapter 16. Lucy Monroe's house was a low-slung one-story. Thick mud walls and personal solar panels heavily chained to the roof, looking like mental patients in danger of escape. Old-school enviro design with a juniper beam shade porch, protected by a sagging blue and gold rubberized tarp that looked as if it had been stolen from an old comic con, from back when Phoenix had still managed to put on real conventions. A beat-up Ford was parked at an odd angle across the front yard. Rusted wheel wells and jacked-up tires. A beast of a truck, looking as if it had done about a million desert miles and still wanted to road warrior its way straight out of hell. A couple of chickens scattered, clucking ahead of Angel's Tesla as he pulled to a stop. He climbed out and leaned against the car. Most of the other properties around the Journo's home were protected by cinder block walls, hiding whatever was behind them from prying eyes. Farther down the alley, Angel thought he spied the tin and chipboard shacks and Kelty tents of a squatter camp. He wondered if someone had managed to drill into some old Phoenix water main. There weren't any relief pumps nearby, so it was odd to see the squatter camp. Case would never have let that happen back in Vegas. Couldn't let people get away with tapping water they weren't paying for. Another reason Phoenix was dying. He put on his sunglasses and waited. If Lucy was inside, he figured she'd be watching him, trying to decide what to do, recognizing him and probably not liking it. So he waited, giving her time to get used to the idea of a visitor. He'd been an unwelcome visitor enough times before that he'd developed rituals for the process. Delivering bad news to people who were about to lose their water was a special expertise. Running up against denial was always a dangerous business. He cataloged the rooftops of nearby buildings by habit, looking for cameras and snipers, but nothing stood out. A black and gray mange of an Australian Shepherd mix lay under Lucy's truck, pink tongue lolling, seeming too hot to give a damn about his intrusion. A chicken pecked right in front of the dog's nose. Mutt couldn't even be bothered to bark. Angel decided he'd given Lucy Monroe enough time. He pushed open the yard gate, scraping dust aside. The dog perked up, not at Angel, but at the house door's simultaneous opening. The Journo came out, a shadow emerging from under tarped porch into hot sun to stand casually, hip cocked, hands in her back pockets. Her voice was hard. "What are you doing here?" When he'd seen her in the morgue, she'd been different. Dressed to get some respect from the cops and the ME. More professional. Now she stood in tight-faded jeans that showed her hips, and a cut-neck t-shirt that hung loose over small breasts. She looked casual, as if he'd caught her doing chores. "I was hoping we could talk," he said. She jerked her head toward his car. "I knew you weren't a cop." "Nope. But you pretended you were." She was wary, but still. To Angel, it was just like the last time. The lady might be dressed different, but her eyes were the same. Gray eyes that had seen too much, that knew too much. To Angel, her eyes were like discovered pools found in the deep shadows of a sandstone canyon. Salvation and stillness all in one. Cool waters that, when you knelt to drink, showed your own self looking back at you from the depths, pure recognition. Something you could drown in and not regret.
I think we got off on the wrong foot before, Angel said.
You think?
The journalist's hands came out of her back pockets. A pistol gleamed dully in one fist. Matte black thing, just bigger than her palm. Barely more than an ammo clip with its short barrel, but deadly just the same.
I think I know everything I need to know about you.
Whoa! Angel held up his hands. You got me wrong. I just want to talk.
The way you talked to Jamie? With a poker up my ass and some electroshock?
She raised the pistol. Angel found himself staring straight into the tiny black hole of the barrel.
You got me wrong.
I doubt it.
She's afraid, Angel realized.
The pistol might be steady, but the lady was terrified. The remote chill of her expression, she thought she was dead already.
Fucking hell. She thinks she's making a last stand.
I'm not looking for trouble.
Angel backed up and sat on a low adobe wall, deliberately de-escalating, making himself seem as passive and harmless as possible.
No one is, she said.
She squinted down the barrel.
You've got 5 seconds to walk away and make sure I never see you again. You should be glad you weren't already dead.
I just want to talk.
5?
She wasn't a natural killer, Angel didn't think. She was just over the edge, pushed past right and wrong. He'd seen this look in other people before. He knew the desperation. He'd been there himself.
Listen, 4?
He'd seen it in Texas refugees, when they got pinned down by New Mexican bandits on the long walk out of Texas. He'd seen it in narco mules who'd been so abused that they'd given up and just wanted to hurt someone back before they died. He'd seen it in Nevada ranchers, bent on defending their irrigation headgates when the SNWA came to shut them off. Lucy wasn't someone who lived for killing. But then again, when people lost hope, they sometimes lost their humanity too. Desperate people did desperate things, became avatars of unexpected tragedy.
You don't want to do this.
3?
Come on, Angel protested.
It doesn't have to be this way. I just want to talk.
Already he was planning how he'd get close, fast.
He could turn, take the bullet in his ballistic jacket and keep going. He could take her.
It would be close, but he could definitely put her down.
If you'll just listen.
2? Against all his instincts, he spread his arms wide. His ballistic jacket opened, making him even more vulnerable.
I didn't kill your friend. The only reason I'm here is 'cause you want to know the same things I do. I just want to talk.
He closed his eyes and braced himself for the bullet, arms wide, crucified.
Here it comes.
He held his breath, hating that he'd put himself in this position, wishing he'd just taken her out. And now he was stuck praying he'd read the woman right.
Jesus Maria Santa Muerte.
No bullets. Angel cracked an eyelid. Lucy still had the pistol pointed at him, but she wasn't shooting. Angel tried a smile on her.
You done with the gun? Can we talk now?
Who are you, really?
Lucy asked.
Just someone who wants to talk to the journal who throws up all the hashtags about murder and water and Phoenix. Hashtag Phoenix down the tubes, right? That's you? You write that one hard.
Angel let some hesitancy show, wanting her to feel powerful, wanting to give her the feeling she was in control.
She is in control, you dumb pendejo, a cynical voice noted in his head. She's got you dead with a bullet in the eye if she's even a half-decent shot.
Angel pressed.
This isn't just about your friend getting caught up, is it? There's something else going on down here that doesn't smell right, and we both know it. I'm hoping you can steer me a little. That's all. I just want to talk.
You think I care what you want? Some asshole who pretends to be a cop? What makes you think I'd care about helping you?
Maybe we can trade, Angel soothed. Help each other out. You wouldn't be pointing a gun in my face if you weren't afraid of something, right?
But I swear I'm not the one who you got to be watching out for. Might be we can help each other.
Lucy laughed bitterly.
I'd be insane to trust you.
I come in peace.
You'd be more peaceful if I put a bullet in you.
Can't learn anything from a corpse.
I could shoot your knees out, she said. We could see how much you smile after I blow off your kneecaps.
You could, but I don't think that's you. See, I've met those people and I don't think you're one of them. That's not how someone like you plays the game.
It's you, though, right? That's exactly how you are.
Angel shrugged. Not saying I'm some saint, just saying we got mutual interests.
I really should shoot you.
No, you don't want to be the person who kills in cold blood. Trust me.
To Angel's surprise, Lucy's shoulders slumped, and she lowered her pistol.
I don't have any idea what kind of a person I am anymore, she said.
And for a moment, her expression looked so exhausted and hopeless that she seemed as if she were 1,000 years old.
You think someone's coming for you, he said.
She gave a dry laugh.
You can't write about the bodies and expect to last for long. Not here.
She turned and strode back toward her house. When she reached the porch, she glanced back, gestured impatiently with the pistol.
Well, come on, she said. We'll try talking.
He couldn't help smiling. He'd been exactly right about who she was. He knew her. As soon as he'd seen her, he'd known her. Maybe he'd always known her. He followed Lucy into the house. As he passed her dog, still lolling under the truck, Angel grinned at the animal.
I know her, he said.
It sounded good to say out loud. The dog yawned in response and rolled onto its side, entirely unimpressed. The interior of Lucy's home was neat and spare and cool. Terracotta tile floors, Guatemalan woven curtains, some Navajo pottery on shelves, a familiar hodgepodge of southwestern kitsch. On a rough-cut wooden table, she had a tablet and keyboard laid out, cased in military-grade shock shielding, the kind of thing that Angel could throw against a wall and wouldn't break. A caked REI filter mask and goggles were dropped on the table by the computer, lying in a pile of sand and dust, as if she'd come in too hurried to even bother shaking them off before getting to work, because she'd wanted so badly to get to her computer. Bookshelves, pictures, some of them images that she had clearly shot, windows into collapse, a family riding out of Texas in a pickup, a bunch of girls and boys, shotguns and hunting rifles bristling, as they sat atop the family's 300-gallon water tank. They waved their state flag with them. It made Angel wonder how much farther they'd gotten with that kind of provocation waving. More images. Mary Perry prayer tent. People down on their knees, begging God to save them. Whipping their own backs with ocotillo thorn stalks. A chipsun twinkling chain of vehicles streaming down a highway, surrounded by red sandstone desert beneath scalding blue desert skies. Maybe Texans making the New Mexico crossing under guard. It had to be old. National Guard kept people in place now, didn't help them get where they were going. One frame stood out, cycling slowly through images of kids in someplace green, a place where people smiled and skin was soft with humidity.
Family? Angel asked.
Lucy hesitated.
My sisters.
A pale-skinned woman with her head on the shoulder of a dark-skinned man who looked to Angel like he might have been Middle Eastern or Indian. The woman had Lucy's face, but none of the hardened depth of Lucy's eyes. Lucy had been down the rabbit hole of suffering and come back, scarred but unbroken. This other woman, this pale version of Lucy,
She'd break easy, Angel thought. He could see it even in her picture. Lucy's sister was the kind of people who broke easy.
Looks green, Angel said. Vancouver. I hear your underwear molds in places like that.
A small laugh from Lucy.
That's what I say, but Anna keeps denying it.
Books on one shelf, a small collection of old titles. Isaac Dinesen, bound in leather. Alice in Wonderland, in an old illustrated edition. The kind of thing someone kept to show visitors how smart they were. Accessories to identity. But one book, a copy of Cadillac Desert, old. He reached for it.
Don't, she said. It's a sign first.
Angel smirked.
Course it is.
Then, my boss makes all her new hires read that. She likes us to see this mess isn't an accident. We were headed straight to hell and didn't do anything about it.
Jamie used to say that too.
The water lawyer? Your friend?
Your boss, Catherine Case?
Angel grinned.
Whoever.
He leaned against her counter.
Silence stretched between them.
You want water? Lucy asked.
If you're feeling hostly. She gave him a look that seemed to say she wasn't sure if she was feeling hostly or still wanted to put a bullet in him. But she got a glass and flipped open the spigot on her filter urn. The digital display came alive as water spilled into the glass. 28.6 gallons. 28.5 gallons. He noted that she filled the glass one-handed. She hadn't stopped keeping her eye on him, and she hadn't put down her gun. At least she wasn't pointing it at him anymore. He decided that was probably as much of a concession as he was going to get from her today.
You used to be more careful about what you wrote, he said.
Lucy glanced over wryly as she finished filling the glass and handed it across.
You're a critic now?
Angel took the glass and toasted thanks, but didn't drink.
You know that tamarisk hunters in the old days would always share water when they met each other on the Colorado?
I heard something like that.
They were competing to kill off anything that sucked extra water out of the river. Tamarisk, the cottonwoods, Russian olive, whatever. This was before California started putting so much of the river in a straw, so competition was fierce. The more they cleared, the more water they got as a bounty, so they traded water every time they met, just a little, one canteen to another, and then they'd drink together.
A ritual.
Sure, kind of a reminder, a way for them to keep track of the idea that they were all in it together, even if they were fighting over the same scraps.
He waited.
Will you drink with me?
She studied him. Shook her head finally. We're not that close.
Suit yourself.
He toasted her again anyway, a gift of life from her hand. He took a sip.
Losing your friend Jamie seems to have made you take some risks. Now you're jumping at shadows and you think the devil's coming for you. So why the change?
She looked away, blinking rapidly. Seemed to harden herself.
I can't believe I care. He was such an asshole.
Yeah?
He was full of himself.
She paused, searching for words. He liked to look good, liked to think he was smarter than everyone else, and he liked to prove it.
And that's why he's dead now.
I tried to warn him.
What was he into?
Angel asked.
Why don't you tell me?
There it was, the hardness again. There was vulnerability underneath, but not for him. Now she was looking at him with those chip-gray eyes, and whatever soft part of her existed, it was locked away.
Guess it had to do with water rights, Angel said.
He carried his glass of water over to the shock-proofed computer. Took a sip.
Something big, valuable.
He studied the computer and its edges.
It's locked, she said. Don't mean to pry.
Bullshit. Why'd your friend Vosevich get killed? She asked. Who was he working for?
If you got his name, I guess you already know who he worked for. She gave him an irritated look.
His ID says he's with the Salt River Project, but that's clearly bullshit. He might have been pulling a salary there, but I think he was a mole for someone else.
Sounds pretty far-fetched.
Moles? She laughed.
Los Angeles dried up the Owen Valley in the 1920s, and even then they had moles working for them. If it was worth doing back then, it's damn sure worth doing now.
You're the expert.
He came back to the counter, set his glass down on the tile, noted her purse and keys and phone lying out. Purple leather bag, worked heavily with silver stitching.
Nice purse, he said, touching it.
You didn't answer my question.
Still a nice piece of work.
It's a Selena, she said.
You don't look like a clothes hound.
Mostly just go with CK Ballistic. He touched his jacket.
Gets the job done, you know.
She seemed disappointed. Jamie knew clothes. He's the one who bought it for me. I never had much time for things like that, but he was always trying to give me some ice. She shrugged. That's what he was always saying. You need some ice, girl. You need some ice.
Everyone wants to be icy, Angel said, reaching for her phone.
Lucy plucked it out of his hands. You still didn't answer my questions. She went to sit on her couch and set the pistol beside her, crossed her legs. Angel was suddenly aware of the shape of her. She did it for him, he decided. He liked her legs, her hips, her ass. He liked the look of those gray eyes. He liked that she wasn't going to let herself be afraid of him or put up with any bullshit, and that she was willing to risk something to learn what she wanted.
So? She pressed.
Who was your friend in the morgue?
Seriously?
Angel found a chair and dragged it so that he sat across from her.
You're too smart to need to ask that.
She looked annoyed. I don't play guessing games.
So don't guess.
She frowned, studying him. Vegas, she decided. You're a water knife and you work for Catherine Case. You're one of hers. Angel laughed.
Thought you were going to say 007.
I doubt you're smart enough to be 007, she said. You're enough of a pig the way you look at my ass, but you're not smart enough. Angel leaned back, hiding that she'd stung him.
Water knives don't exist, he said. That's just something people talk about. It's a myth, right? Like the chupacabra. It's just something people make up so they can have a boogeyman to blame when shit goes wrong. Catherine Case don't have water knives. She just got a lot of people who solve problems. She's got lawyers and informants and guardies, sure. Water knives? Angel shrugged. Not so much.
Lucy laughed sharply. So she doesn't have people who infiltrate other cities' water departments?
No.
And she doesn't have people who make farmers disappear in the middle of the night when they won't sell their water rights?
Nope.
And she doesn't have people who organize and arm militias on Nevada's southern border to attack people from Arizona and Texas and New Mexico if we try to cross the Colorado River and get into your state? Angel couldn't help a small smirk.
Now you're catching on.
And you don't have black helicopters that blew up Carver City's water treatment plant either.
Oh no, we definitely did that. That water was ours.
So you are Nevada, working for Catherine Case. He shrugged. Don't be coy. I knew you weren't California. Those people like business suits.
Different cut, Angel said.
Fabric's still ballistic, though. She gave him a tight smile. So why don't you tell me what your not-a-water-knife friend was doing with Jamie when they both got themselves killed?
I bet you know that, too. Think it through, lay it out.
Seriously, you think you can work me like this? Every time I guess something about you, you use it to try to ask me something?
No,
she shook her head. You don't get to come into my house and pump me like that. You talk to me or you go.
Or what? You shoot me?
Try me.
He held up his hands, apologizing.
So ask your questions.
Aren't you tired of destroying things?
Destroying things?
He laughed.
That's not how I roll. You got me wrong.
You think? Everywhere you go, people suffer. She waved her hand toward her barred windows.
Don't you ever feel ashamed for what you did here in Phoenix? Do you even pause to think about it?
You make me sound like I got magical powers or something. I didn't do anything to Phoenix. Phoenix did itself.
Phoenix didn't cut the CAP. Someone came in and did that with high explosives.
I heard it was Mormon secessionists.
The city was out of water for months before they got it repaired.
Look, Phoenix made itself vulnerable. That ain't my fault, any more than it's my fault that Carver City built themselves in the middle of a desert on a bunch of junior water rights. Simon, you can bitch all he wants, but that city had no business pumping that water in the first place.
That was you, wasn't it?
Her eyes widened.
You were actually in Carver City. You're one of the ones who blew it up.
Christ, you're probably the one who did the CAP, too.
Somebody's got to bleed if anybody's going to drink.
You sound like a Catholic.
I mostly roll with La Santa Muerte. But as far as guilt goes, no, I don't feel guilt. If Vegas didn't push this place over the edge, California would have done it.
He jerked his head toward the copy of Cadillac Desert on Lucy's bookshelf.
A lot of people knew this was a stupid place to grow a city from a long way back, but Phoenix just stuck its head in the sand and pretended disaster wasn't coming.
So you don't even pause at blowing up their last stable water supply, Lucy said.
You like this muckraking, don't you? Digging up the lies, shouting out the truth even if it gets you killed.
Of course, Lucy broke off.
Now, you know what? No, I don't give a damn about the lies. Lies are fine.
Truth, lies. One way or the other, at least.
She broke off again, shaking her head.
It's not the lies, it's the silence.
Silence is what gets me. All the things you don't say, all the words you don't write.
That gets to you. After a while, it just kills you. All the stories you teach yourself not to tell, all the truth and lies that you never, ever print, because all of it is too dangerous.
But now you're up on the rooftops shouting.
I'm tired of it.
She shook her head. You wouldn't believe the things I don't write about.
She shrugged.
Or maybe you would.
She made a tired gesture.
You're part of it.
If you say so.
She scowled. Vegas Waterknife thinks he's a badass.
I hold my own, Angel said.
You think?
I'm still here, and so is Vegas.
No, she shook her head. You're Bush League.
Abruptly, she stood and went to look out her window.
California. Those people know how to play the game. Los Angeles, San Diego, the Imperial Valley companies. Those people know how to fight for water. It's in their veins, their blood. They've been killing places for water for 5 generations. They're good at it.
She went to another window and looked out, scanning the sun-drenched yard beyond.
Catherine Case is playing catch-up, she said.
I used to think she was someone who mattered. Water knives like you were the boogeymen, thanks to the CAP.
She shook her head. But you're nothing.
I know that now.
Because of Jamie, Angel supplied. You think the Callies killed him?
She glanced back at him. They didn't have any reason to. He was giving them what they wanted.
She trailed off.
I assumed it was your people, Las Vegas.
It definitely wasn't us, so it had to be California.
She didn't seem to be listening.
A while back, she said, I went to interview a man, this exec from a company that was doing water exploration for the state. Drilling and hydrofracking, hydrological analysis, things like that. This man sits down across from me, and I think we're going to talk about drilling and pumping, aquifer recharge.
Maybe some of the work they do down in Texas on aquifer desal around whatever's left off San Antonio.
Water geek stuff. At worst, he's going to blow some smoke up my ass about how Arizona's got a deeper water aquifer and how they're going to frack us into becoming the North Dakota of water or some other bullshit. Instead, he's got a blood rag with him. He tosses it on the table. Lucy paused, looking back at Angel. You've seen the blood rags, haven't you? Angel nodded.
Last night you said you were working for them.
It's a good way to look harmless if you're a journalist, she said. You cover bodies, but you don't cover the stories behind the bodies. Bodies without background are just fine. She changed her voice.
Just the blood, ma'am, just the blood.
She smiled tightly. That's what Timo likes to say.
Your photographer friend, right? I talked to him.
He's good at his job. Anyway, this place is falling apart. Everyone knows it's narcos moving in, working the squatter territories, turning Texans and New Mexicans and half of Latin America into mules to go north. Gulf cartel against the Horace cartel fighting over who controls the plaza here. But nobody writes about it. She trailed off, seeming lost in her thoughts, then finally said, But here's this man sitting across from me, and he's got this blood rag with him, wearing a suit, tie, little glasses, you know, the new ones that have the augreal layer. And he sits down, and instead of saying he's making some drilling play, he says, You write a lot of stories that are critical of California. She laughed bitterly. You would have thought I was getting minded by the Ministry of Public Information in Beijing, but it wasn't that. It was just me and this man with a blood rag beside him.
And this was an executive for a drilling company?
Yeah.
Was it Ibis?
She gave him a blank look. I forget. If you want to tell me which companies Las Vegas has infiltrated, I'll remember which ones California uses.
Touché, Angel said. So you're talking to an Ibis exec, and he says...
Lucy laughed.
You know Arizona's fucked when California owns the companies that are supposedly helping them find water.
She laughed again.
So yeah, this Ibis exec made me an offer.
I could write about anything I wanted, but maybe I should stop worrying about what California was doing here or there and spend more time worrying about other things. Maybe I could focus more on Colorado River compact revisions or changes in staffing in the Interior Department or Nevada.
She gestured toward Angel.
Write about shadowy Las Vegas water knives, or maybe write about how America doesn't have enough FEMA staff to handle hurricanes on the Gulf, and tornadoes in the Midwest, and floods on the Mississippi, and seawalls collapsing in Manhattan. Human interest stories are wonderful. Write about exhausted FEMA personnel and how the federal government doesn't have enough energy to take care of a bunch of Texans whose towns have just dried up. There were so many stories I could write about, so many interesting things happening in the world.
Lucy laughed bitterly.
He wasn't telling me what to write. He was just saying that maybe I should think a little bit about all the other really interesting stories that needed covering. And then he pushed a stack of UN over to me that must have been 8 inches tall. He wasn't even embarrassed about it. He just passed the money over and got up. Said, thank you for your time, and walked out. And there I am, sitting with a stack of money and that blood rag with a picture of some swimmer with her blood draining out in the bottom of an empty pool and wild dogs down there with her, licking up the blood. There I am. She looked over at Angel. That's how California plays the game. Catherine Case can have as many secret agents as she wants, but when it comes down to it, California sets the rules. California doesn't fuck around.
You caved.
She gave him a thoughtful look. You know, at first, when someone tells you how it's going to be, you're angry, right? You want to push back. You want to show them you're not afraid, so you push. You read another article about Ibis Exploratory, maybe write about how California is muscling to pump more out of Lake Havasu.
You connect a line between an Arizona politician and a narco who's on the IBIS board and who just gave $50,000 to Congressman Dwayne Rayner, who just happens to be lobbying to undo the last Colorado River Compact abridgment, and who has a new summer house up in Vancouver.
Esoteric stuff.
Articles that are drier than desert when you're digging through travel schedules and cash transfers. Nobody reads stories about paperwork the way they look at pictures in the blood rags, right? I mean, nobody's even reading your stories, even if you write them. I was up for a Pulitzer one year for some of that reporting. Probably my least read article ever, but next thing I know, all my tires are knifed and I can't make it to an interview. And that's when you know that at least one person is reading your stuff, and that one person is the only one who matters. She shrugged. So you learn. You don't write about the bodies because the narcos don't like that. Well, you don't tell the stories behind the bodies anyway. And you don't write about the money because the politicians hate that. And you definitely don't write about Callies because they'll make sure you stop writing for good.
Lot of don'ts.
I'm tired of them.
So now you're running it all up the flag.
He nodded to her pistol.
Waiting for people to come gunning for you.
She laughed bitterly. Maybe I've got a death wish.
Nobody's got a death wish, he said. They might say they do, but anyone who's been close to it don't want it.
Her phone rang. She picked up. Lucy Monroe. She listened. Her eyes went to Angel, then down.
Yeah? Fiverr?
She became intent. Say it again.
Okay, I got it.
No, not right now.
Again, a glance at Angel.
Yeah, okay, good.
She clicked off.
You should go, she said to Angel.
You're not going to tell me what your friend Jamie was into?
Angel asked.
No, she said.
I don't think I need you now, actually.
She tapped her pistol against her thigh. Didn't quite point it at him.
You need to go.
I thought we were just starting to get along.
She gave him a look.
You're all the same. Nevada, California, whoever. You're all down here ripping around, looking for another way to keep water in the river for yourself.
She jerked her head toward the window, the dusty skyline of Phoenix beyond.
You say you wouldn't ever do what they did to Jamie, but you've already done worse to all the people out there.
Wasn't us who built this place so bad. Phoenix did itself.
Then I guess your friend Vosevich did himself, too.
She pointed the pistol at him.
Whoa!
Angel lifted his hands.
We back to this?
It was always this. The gun was steady in her hand.
Get out.
And if I ever see you again, I will shoot you. And I won't give you any warning at all. She meant it. Before, she hadn't been serious, but now, after the phone call, she was pure death.
Angel set his glass down carefully and stood up.
You're making a mistake, he said. I could be a friend. For a moment, he thought he might have a chance of getting through to her, but then it passed, and she motioned him toward the door with the pistol.
I don't need a friend,
she said. I've got a dog. Chapter 17.
He's in the Taiyang. 5-11-10. Emratan is the listing.
Tima was proud of his sleuthing. Lucy kept him on the line as she drove her truck through the blistering Phoenix sunshine. She checked her mirrors multiple times, but didn't see any sign of the water knife or his bright yellow Tesla.
Unless he's got others with him.
She made a couple slow circles, doubling back and winding through abandoned cul-de-sac subdivisions, making sure he wasn't on her, then gunned it and headed for the Taiyang while Timo chattered happily in her ear.
I'm sure it's the same guy as the one you're looking for. He used a Cali driver's license for proof of ID. He's a fiver, just like you thought.
The problem was that even if M. Ratan was a fiver, Lucy very much wasn't.
As soon as she made it into the public atriums of the Taiyang, the guards at the gates to the residence towers put a stop to her.
They were damned if they let some sweaty zoner drop in unannounced on Mr. M. Rattan. As much as it pissed her off, she couldn't muster resentment toward the guards. Their jobs depended on keeping out the Phoenix riffraff. Her job was to make them fail. But in her fast exit from her surreal conversation with the Vegas water knife, she'd failed to prepare for her role. Lucy wasn't a fiver. The guards could tell just by looking at her. Nothing about her said expat, or Callie, or even nice, illegitimate bubble trafficker. She was a little too dust-worn, a little too sun-beaten, a little too rushed and desperate. As far as the guards were concerned, Lucy was pure local zoner. Timo thought this was hilarious, considering how often he'd accused her of being wet. "Guess you're one of us after all," he laughed in her earbud as she continued to try to cajole her way past security. The guard repeated, "If you're a guest of Mr. Rattan, you can have him call me, and I'll program the elevator to let you up." She backed off. She'd already made enough of a fuss, trying to get them to call up four times. "I'll try again in a bit," she said. "We have a meeting. He's probably just not back yet." "I'm sure that's the case." The guard smiled pleasantly. "If he answers, we can ask." Lucy retreated from the residence access turnstiles to the Arcology's public plaza. She circled the fountains and pools, passing the mist of waterfalls cascading down from the upper floors. She pretended interest in the coffee shops and boutiques that populated the space, but all the while she kept her eye on the residence elevators and their security people, trying to see if there was some other way up. 51110. 51110. Tower 5, Floor 11, Apartment 10. She had a name, she had an address, and she couldn't do anything about it. All her digging was being stymied by an overly professional rent-a-cop. She sat on the edge of the cart pond and watched the 20-foot flat screens that dangled strategically over the public space, displaying news and stock prices in English and Spanish and Chinese, keeping the occupants informed of the time and temperature in Shanghai. Executives and secretaries from Taiyang Solar Development were laughing and talking in the atrium, separated by their glass walls from the world outside, where their local contractors went out into the desert to install solar collectors and string new grid across the sandstone and quartz landscapes. No one wanted zoners in their states, but they were willing to take all the sunlight the place had to offer. So Phoenix had brownouts, while private companies sent their harvested solar north and east and west across Arizona's borders, and the zoners stayed put. Lucy had done a story about it. She'd gotten miserable page views for her trouble. A guard walked past Lucy, then came back for another pass. She grimaced. Outside the Arcology's walls, Phoenix was collapsing into whatever hell it was destined for. But the Taiyang wasn't like that. They didn't like it when scraps of the apocalypse like her squeezed inside. Another private security guy ambled past. Normally, they spent their time catching kids who tried to sneak in and drink from the water features, so of course they were excited by an intruder like her. In its own way, Taiyang controlled its borders as rigorously as Nevada or California. The reward for Taiyang inhabitants was a space that felt as if it were entirely removed from the dust and smoke and collapse of the greater city beyond. Inside Taiyang, residents and corporate rentals could live in comfort. And if you were cleaned up enough and looked as if you had business, you could get into the public plazas and have a coffee or arrange a meeting. Or maybe beg for someone to come down and escort you into one of their residence towers. 51110. Fifth Residence Tower. 11th Floor, Apartment 10. Better than a zip code. A five-digit address. A fiver. Five-digit ticket. Permission to enter another world. The security guards were definitely watching her now. She'd lingered too long. Lucy pulled out her cell phone and pretended to make a call. But she could see that she wasn't selling it to the rent-a-cops. One of them was looking right at her, His hand was up by his ear, touching his earbud, triggering some alert that would put her on facial recognition in the future and get her kicked out in the present.
Miss?
She startled. A new Taiyang security guard stood over her, a zapstick tapping idly against his leg.
Do you have business here?
They were good. She had to give them credit for that. She hadn't even seen this one coming. She hesitated. I was just going upstairs.
He glanced back to the residency guard, who was watching their interaction.
You a resident, then? You have your card? A guest ticket?
The cop waited, not letting up. Is there someone I should call for you? No, that's fine. I'm just enjoying the water. If you've lost your ticket, we can look you up. He was too accustomed to pushing people out. Too many people slipped in to get close to this luxury of the water misters and filtered air free of smoke and dust, the cascade of water and the rich smell of living earth and plants. He was used to moving people along, politely, without making a scene that would disrupt the carefully constructed serenity of the Taiyang arcology. And if she didn't go easily, well, there was always the zapstick, tapping idly against his thigh. She'd at least be quiet as he and his buddies hauled her unconscious body out of the building and dumped her on the streets. It's fine, she said. I'm going. Just let me put my things away. Of course, miss. Entirely polite. They were always polite, as long as you moved in the direction they wanted you to move. As long as they didn't have to goose you. They could even be kind. Lucy accepted that she was beaten. She caught a glimpse of rich fivers moving toward the turnstiles, a knot of them in business suits, all talking and animated, masters of the universe, Chinese and Spanish pinballing back and forth between the executives. If she just timed it better, she might have tailgated. But with the security man crowding her toward the exit, there wasn't anything she could do now. She'd have to find some other way to reach Michael Rattan.
Chapter 18.
Curtains of flame and rolling black smoke engulfed Maria, consuming her. A dog-like creature, black and gibbering, swept out of the blaze, yammering to consume her like the devil's own pit bull. Sarah was with her. Maria tried to run from the devil thing, but Sarah was slow. Her hand kept slipping from Maria's, but Maria wouldn't let her go. But then her hand slipped away, and Maria couldn't find it, and her heart broke with the loss. Maria woke, gasping, in the man's apartment, parched and sweaty, her heart hammering in her chest, and all she could think over and over again was, "Thank you, thank you, thank you." It wasn't real, and Sarah wasn't dead, and it had just been a dream. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Maria realized that both Sarah and the man had their arms over her. No wonder she was boiling. She wriggled free, trying not to disturb them. Now that she was awake, she felt nauseated and miserable. Her head felt as though someone was driving a screwdriver through her eye. She eased over to the bed's edge and tried to stand. Immediately grabbed a wall for support as the bedroom tilted. She made herself breathe slowly, trying to stay steady in the dimness. The intertwined pair in the bed slumbered on. Sarah and her man. Rattan. Maria laughed at herself, not sure if she was disgusted or appalled that she didn't remember his first name, or even if she cared. He told her his name a bunch of times, but she just couldn't remember it. Sarah had pinned so much hope on him, this man whose first name Maria couldn't dredge from memory. She'd lost her virginity to a stranger. She wasn't sure if she was supposed to care about that, either. Maybe she'd lost it to Sarah, really. She'd been with Sarah. Maria liked that thought better. She'd lost her real virginity to Sarah. A bottle of champagne lay on the floor. Maria didn't remember that, either. Or else she did, but had thought it was a dream. The previous night was all so muddy and surreal. She and Sarah trading sips and kissing, letting the icy fizzing wine run down their bodies to the hydrologist's eager tongue. Dream or real? Memory or premonition? Well, the bottle was empty. That was real. Seeing it gleaming on the floor, she felt the loss of her bubble high. Sober, the luxurious bedroom felt too silent, almost lonely. The sheets, crumpled and sweaty, the bottle empty. Sarah's blonde hair tangled across the pillow, her arm sprawled across the bed to touch the man's shoulder, a strangely intimate gesture, making them seem closer than paid lovers. Seeing the two of them touching brought more jumbled feelings. Snap flash memories. Sarah and her kissing. Maria's body feeling electric. Rattan wanting to be part of them and Sarah bringing him in. Sarah focused on taking care of her man, when all Maria had wanted was for Sarah to kiss her again. Again and again. To feel her skin against her friend's. Maria remembered her hands shaking with excitement. It had felt as if she'd had bombs detonating under her skin, explosions of trembling, starved anticipation. Overwhelming, shaking, reaching for Sarah again and again, tolerating the man. She remembered how Sarah had stared at him so hungrily. Her ticket out of Arizona if he liked her well enough. And then the feeling of Rattan's gaze on Maria's own body, his hand sliding up her thigh. The three of them chained together, link by link. Maria obsessed with Sarah, Sarah obsessed with the man. And the man obsessed, finally, not with the girl who had brought him Maria as a sacrifice in the hope of going north, but with Maria. At the time, Maria hadn't cared. All she had wanted was Sarah. Now she couldn't help but feel deflated by all their hungers not quite filled. She went searching for a bathroom. Found cool marble floors, turquoise and silver-rimmed mirrors, and blue and white-tiled countertops. She stared at herself in the mirror. There was nothing different about her. She was still here. She was still the same. She'd had sex with a boy and a girl, both. She hadn't cared for one at all, but the other... She kept staring at herself. She was the same. Her father would never have been able to guess what she did last night. Nobody on the street could see where or how or what she had done for money, or what she had enjoyed, whom she had loved. She sat on the toilet, hyper-aware of the cool porcelain against her skin as she peed, trying to remember the last time she hadn't used the squat latrine out behind her and Sarah's basement hideout, or else a Johnny truck. The last time she hadn't had to tear pages from a blood rag to wipe. She remembered once sneaking into the Hilton Six, making it all the way into a stall before a woman attendant came to roust her, and then the lady taking pity on her and letting her wash her face and hands in the sink, and drink her fill before sending her back out into the heat and dust. Maria flushed. Water gurgled. Amazing. A thrill of transgression swept her as she walked out into the kitchen and went through the man's cabinets. A thief filling a glass, watching the billing monitor flicker in red beside the faucet as she filled it to the top. Maria drank it all. She filled another, smiling that she could bill it to this man whose name she had forgotten. She held the cool glass to her cheek, drank it too. Again, water crashed into the glass as she refilled a third time. She couldn't get enough. She was too bloated to drink it now, but she couldn't let it go. She carried the glass back into the bathroom and turned on the shower. Gallons and gallons and gallons of water poured over her. More water than all of her score at the Red Cross pump gushed down her body and disappeared down the drain. Memories of Sarah and the man clung to her as she soaped herself. The shaking excitement, The raw pleasure of skin against skin. Bubble. She was afraid she liked the drug too much. Now it seemed as if everything she touched felt a little less bright, a little less real than when she'd been high. She wondered how to buy Bubble. How Sarah got hold of it. She felt clean. Dios, she felt clean. She scrubbed her underwear, wishing she thought somehow to bring other clothes with her. Sarah always planned ahead when she came to the Taeyang. The curtain rattled aside, revealing Rattan, naked. Doing laundry? He was gazing at her, an odd smile on his face as Maria stood dripping, with her underwear in her hands. She started to stammer an explanation, but he just said, "It's fine. My company pays for the apartment and the water. You can do the rest of your clothes before you leave." And then he climbed in. He soaped himself, eyes roaming her body. Maria expected him to try to have sex with her again and hoped he wouldn't. But he did. She was sore, but she let him. It was nothing. It was easier this time. Something she could pretend to like. She pretended Sarah was with her. When they finished, he got out and handed her a towel. She took another for her hair, remembering how she and her mother had both used to wrap their hair in towels before the guardies came and explained that they'd been moved to shelters, before everything went wrong. By the time Maria went out into the living room, Rattan had pulled open the shades. Dawn light was just starting to touch the sky, turning the dust haze red. She hadn't slept as late as she thought. He went into the kitchen. Now that they were out of the shower, he seemed almost embarrassed. His eyes avoided hers. He hesitated. "Are you okay?" He'd done exactly what he wanted, and done it again in the shower, but now that he wasn't hard, he couldn't meet her eye. She was amazed that he looked so abashed and wondered why she didn't feel the same. Her father and mother would have been heartbroken at what she'd done, and she didn't care at all. "Do you want some breakfast?" he asked. She tucked the towel more tightly around herself, nodded, not trusting her voice. A shower, clean clothes. She glanced toward the bedroom. Sarah was still asleep. "I forgot your first name," she admitted. He smiled at that, almost boyish for a moment, and also relieved somehow. "Michael, Mike." He offered a hand for her to shake. "Nice to meet you." And then he sort of laughed and looked embarrassed. "Again, I mean." Maria smiled back, wanting him to feel comfortable. "Again." He pulled eggs from his refrigerator and cracked them into a bowl while Maria took in the apartment. She couldn't help but feel astonished at the place's luxury. Navajo carpets on hardwood in the living room. Paintings on the wall. Real books on shelves in careful, artful stacks, interspersed with pottery that looked Japanese to Maria. The refrigerator hummed contentedly, running on a stable electric supply. And quiet. So quiet. She couldn't hear anyone fighting overhead. Wasn't surrounded by watching eyes. He ran water down the drain and tossed his eggshells down with it. He noticed her following his movements. "It's not getting wasted," he explained. "It all gets recycled. It goes down to methane digesters, then passes through carp ponds and snail beds. Some of it gets reverse osmosis filtered and comes back up through the pipes, and some of it goes into the vertical farm on the south face." Maria let him talk, marveling at what he thought he needed to explain, and what he took for granted. At one time, she'd had all these things, too. Simple, basic things. Faucets. A room of her own. AC. And she'd taken them all for granted, just as this man did. He didn't realize the magic of his life. Maria remembered Sarah clutching to her, whispering in her ear as Mike thrust into her. He'll pay. But it wasn't the money that mattered. Lingering here, that was everything. Are you here for a long time? She asked. As soon as the words left her mouth, Maria realized how obvious she sounded.